What's up, Gravel Family? I'm Sophia.
And I'm Jason.
And this is the Gravel Family Podcast. The Gravel Family Podcast is an encouraging space to motivate more people to get on their bikes and enjoy gravel.
We're going to share a variety of stories from hometown pirates to the top tier pros. We're also going to share training tips and insights on Gravel Worlds and other events, as well as answer your questions that arise through your training season.
We are so excited you're here. Welcome to the Gravel Family.
All right, what's up, Gravel Family? I'm Jason.
And I'm Sophia.
And we are continuing on full speed ahead into our Power Couples episode. This was supposed to be like 3 or 4 episodes, and now I think this is like the 6th one or something, and we have like
'cause these couples are just too good.
It's too good, and we keep getting great recommendations, and we're like, oh yeah, why didn't we think of them? And this is another one that like 6 people recommended, so we had to have them on too. There's some correlations with Nika, and we just had our local Nika team on the podcast, so go back and listen to that episode. And then there's some Nika references to this episode. Speaking of which, the first guest here, she is the executive director of NorCal Nika. She is a Julian Bicycle Ambassador, and she's also a stage 4 cancer survivor.
And then on the other side, he is the elite athlete and community manager of Goo Energy Labs. He's an unbound gravel champion and was inducted into the Gravel Cycling Hall of Fame in 2023. Welcome to the podcast, Yuri and Vanessa Oswald.
Woo-hoo. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Excited to be here.
Yeah.
It's awesome to have Yuri back on, even though, for the record, you weren't planned the first time. It was very thrown in because our other guests couldn't get on. So this was actually planned.
Totally. I was the 6th man on the bench. You didn't expect me to come in and you weren't sure, right, what I was going to deliver. So it was great. We did what we could. So it was all good.
But yeah, we planned to have somebody else on and their schedule got all screwed up and you were like, I'll hop on down at Unbound. So it worked out perfectly to have you on there. And we were kind of new to the game. So it was like super nerve wracking for Sophia and I of like, we don't even know what to talk about.
Well, and it was as live could get because we were out on the sidewalk, you know, on the street right near the starting line, finish line. Yeah, so it was pretty crazy.
And you got lucky because we had pretty good weather for your podcast interview. And then the next year we did it, it got rained out. So luckily you were one of our, you were a success case there.
Great. I try to bring the sunshine when I can.
I gotta go back. I want to say you were for sure first 10 episodes of the podcast. It has to be.
Well, I'm honored. Yeah.
I'm honored I accidentally was on top 10.
I only care if I beat Dan Hughes, really, so it doesn't matter. I could be wherever. As long as I'm ahead of Dan Hughes, we're all good. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you know this story. We actually had Dan Hughes on, and then his whole episode, because Sophia talked about how we got rained out. So we recorded all of our episodes. Then the next day, all of our stuff was wet and we didn't know it. So we had every podcast we recorded that day was completely ruined. So we actually recorded Dan Hughes's episode and it was completely garbage. So he still didn't get on until very recently. So technically you've beat him
twice now here. Yeah.
That's right.
I can die a happy man. Yeah.
You have those bragging rights. You have those bragging rights. Oh, yeah. Well, Yuri, you mentioned sunshine. You bring the sunshine, but you guys live where the sunshine is. Sunshine, well, I guess not Sunshine State technically, but you live in California, which I believe is the Sunshine State, really. So what is your guys' story? How did you meet? How did you guys settle in California?
I'll try and be brief. I can answer that one, how we met. I used to live in Durango, Colorado, and Yuri, we're both from Northern California, but I decided to go down to Arizona to surprise my brother because he was going to be doing a mountain bike race down there, and it was fairly close to where I lived at the time. So my boyfriend at the time and I jumped in the truck and drove down to Arizona, and you know, we were going to hide behind a cactus and, like, jump out and surprise my brother. And this guy was with him. And I didn't really realize, well, I knew I was kind of looking for an upgrade, but I wasn't actively, looking for an upgrade. I knew eventually that was the reality for me. And You know, I met Yuri and he was a teacher and a cyclist and he went to Berkeley and I was a teacher at the time and a cyclist and a lot of my family went to Berkeley and I was, and that and many other reasons, I was interested immediately. It was pretty awesome.
That's amazing.
What's your side?
Thanks. My side is all of that, but I distinctly remember her getting out of maybe possibly a Subaru with this huge, beautiful smile on her face that I was attracted to immediately, and these amazing red Doc Martin like cowboy boots, and then the record scratched and the other side opened and her boyfriend got out of the car and it's kind of like, all right, whatever. Yeah.
So then that's been how many years again?
That was like 22 years ago, right?
Oh, yeah. My word. So then how long have you guys been technically living in California that entire time?
I was living here. I've never really left California besides a 2-year stint in Pennsylvania when I was teaching high school, which is actually where I picked up the mountain bike a long time ago. But I've always lived in California. Vanessa was in Durango and then shortly moved back to California. But we've been together, married 21 years now.
Wow.
That's crazy. That's incredible. 21 years. Congrats.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I know we went over your accolades a little bit, but you guys have known each other for now 22 years. What is an accolade that you would like to add to your partner's highlights that we did not mention?
Oh, that's a really good question. Oh. I want to go first.
Okay.
So years ago in Sun Valley, they had an enduro race off the top of Bald Mountain. And Vanessa did it. And either you got second or first or second, but she won some money and it was just like one of those really proud husband moments. I know it sounds trivial, like a bike race or whatever, but she's a shredder on the bike and like ripped this enduro in Sun Valley down to Warm Springs. It was pretty rad.
Hey, I won $50 and I was like, yeah, man, this is more than you've ever won in a race and you're a pro. No, I'm just kidding. Sweetie.
That's harsh. That's
what a good
harsh
one though.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I go ahead.
Oh, this was a pretty proud moment, and I don't think many of his cycling friends know about this, and this one might surprise you, sweetie, but I used to work for a bike tour company back in the day called Backroads. We also used to have these wild end of the year parties, and this was a Zoolander theme party, and Yuri did a Blue Steel walk off on a super long stage, and I don't know if you've ever seen Zoolander, but when he gets to the end and he pulls his boxers or his underwear out of like his pants and the crowd goes absolutely insane. Yuri had known me for like 6 months when he did this, and he like was on this catwalk and he won the Zoolander walk off, and I was like, I am in love. This is amazing. So I'm gonna add Zoolander catwalk winner to his accolades that you guys might not know about.
That was with Mark Sevenoff, who is one of the owners of Western Spirits bike tours in Moab. That was a long time ago. That was great.
Great.
I love that that's a story that sticks out. I love that that's the one.
I haven't thought about that one in a while.
I know, that was a good one.
Yeah. Well, let's keep, we kind of, our next question was kind of on that. So the bike is taking you guys to some incredible places around the world. What are some of your favorite memories as individuals, and then especially some memories together on that, specifically on where the bike is taking you?
I'll jump in on one of my favorite rides that we've done is riding down the California coast, actually, from here. My father's a big cyclist, and he's been bike touring since 100 years ago, and that's how I got into it a long time ago. But we've done a few tours down the coast of California, and it's just such a spectacular route, and you're hundreds of feet above the ocean with sheer cliffs going down to them, and it's gorgeous and just a really fun way to connect as a family. So that has been a really fun ride for me. And then doing some bike touring in Scotland as well has been a really, really big highlight for me.
Yeah, it's tough for me. I mean, I've been blessed with a really amazing career that's taken me all over the world, really. And if I had to pick one experience, it would be the inaugural year of this mountain bike stage race on the South Island in New Zealand called the Pioneer. And I went down there with a dude I barely knew who ran a shop on the North Island named Andrew Young, Youngie. And we smashed ourselves for like 6 days in the Southern Alps of New Zealand mountain biking, and nearly won our age category, super competitive, but it was just beyond the physicality of it, the terrain there was mind-bogglingly beautiful, and a true highlight for me in my racing career.
I think if we're talking around the world stuff, Oli from Lauf would be really mad if I didn't ask about your white shorts in Iceland.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you, Oli. Touche, bro. Yeah, maybe that was a little bit too much of a statement, but they were thermals. And I made the mistake of not wearing leg warmers like a dummy. And for folks that aren't familiar with this story, I was over there scouting for the inaugural Rift course with some folks, and we got caught out in some gnarly summer Icelandic weather, and everybody but one of us had to get in the car with near hypothermia, except for Benedict, who made it all the way to the hut we stayed in. But just an epic day out there. That was super hard. But the white kit, yeah, just trying. But it bounced off the black gravel, didn't it? It popped. I mean,
it made the
cover of Peloton magazine. So.
It
was something.
That's the version back in the day of do it for the gram, right? Like,
yeah.
Well, I guess the cover. Instagram was there. The Rift's not that old.
Not that old. I think that was 20. 17. Yep.
18 like
somewhere
that.
In there. Yeah.
Well, hilarious. Not only has the bike taken you guys to incredible places all over the world, but you also do really cool things in Northern California, including Vanessa. You're the director of NorCal NYCA. You just had one of your first races of the year. Congratulations. How are things going with NYCA 2024?
Oh, thanks so much. And thanks for knowing we just had our first race. It was glorious. It was so much fun. We actually did something new, and we made NYCA history last Saturday, which was we did two concurrent races at the same time at the same venue. So we had our junior development athletes, so that's 6th, 7th, and 8th graders on one course, and then we had our high school athletes on another course, and they were both racing concentric routes at the same time. So you can imagine the logistics with the timing and the volunteers and the marshals and the EMTs and the announcing and all the different pieces that have to come together to make that happen. But we were able to pull it off, and it was super fun and really fun for me because I've been doing this is my 15th year as the director. So I've been doing it for a long time. I like to always try new things and try and evolve. And sometimes I fail and sometimes I have success. And so it keeps it fun. You know, when you have a job for a long time, it's always fun to try and change things up and challenge yourself in new ways. So we had a great event. I'll just add another piece in that the trend for youth sports in 2024 across all sports, so basketball, football, baseball, soccer, everything, is that youth participation has dropped off precipitously this year. And there are a lot of different theories for why that is. Some people blame it on, you know, the COVID bubble. Some people blame it on technology. But we don't totally know all why that is. But so we were kind of wondering how that was going to impact the mountain bike scene here in Northern California. And we're very happy to see that we didn't have as big growth as we always have every year, but we had some growth and certainly not a decline. So that was really exciting for us to see that. And because we're working really hard always to continue bringing new people into the sport and not just, you know, preaching to the choir of people who already ride bikes. So yeah, we're very stoked for the season. We have 9 more races. We have about 3,000 kids participating this year.
Holy cow.
Wow.
And we have about, the other piece that's pretty cool is we have about 13, I think last time I checked a couple weeks ago, about 1,300 volunteer adult coaches.
Let's
and
go.
And so for us, the adult volunteer participation is incredibly important, enormously important to the success of the whole thing. Because if you don't have adults out doing the work, you know, you can't get more kids out. So we're super proud of the amount of kids we have, and then of course the adults that are taking the time, many of whom, you know, aren't parents. They're just stoked on riding and getting more kids into riding themselves. So that's a long answer.
That 3,000 kids, is that just NorCal? That's not the whole state. That's just NorCal.
Absolutely
that is
insane.
Rad.
So yeah. How many teams are?
That's crazy.
You know, how many teams make up those 3,000 riders?
We have 111 teams this year. And so they vary. Like one team, for example, last weekend, Berkeley High has 92 kids on the team. It's way bigger than their football team at a public high school.
Something to be really proud of.
Yeah. And then another team has 4 kids, you know, okay. So it's all over the board, but we do have quite a lot of, what we call D1 teams because of their size. So,
wow. So as the director, what is it that you really love and has kept you in this? I know you mentioned, you know, just seeing everyone who comes into the program, but like, is there something that's like, okay, this is why I do this every single day when I wake up?
Oh gosh, how long do you have? We have an hour right now. I'm kidding. I have a lot of answers. It's a good, a thoughtful question. Thank you for asking that. And I think one of the top ones is, honestly, we tend to have a lot of kids who were either not interested in stick and ball sports or who didn't necessarily fit in those traditional team sports. And so we're providing a space for people who haven't really been drawn to organized sports before. And so as humans, I think we all really crave community and being a part of something and to be able to provide a space for kids who haven't necessarily had a community before feels really meaningful to me. It feels important in a time when many students are isolated behind their screens, and having a life of social interactions that are not in person. So yeah, I think the seeing the kids thrive with each other outdoors to me is just never ceases to be a powerful thing. And then I'll just add one other piece is that seeing the families hanging out together, and we don't, Yuri and I don't have kids, but anyone, whether you have kids or not, I think can appreciate how different it is to see teenagers hanging out with their parents.
Yeah.
And so I can't tell
riding
you
riding with
many,
their parents a lot yeah, of the times yeah. too. Yeah.
I can't tell you how many moms and dads come to me and they just say like, wow, my daughter and I hadn't really been connecting. She didn't want to hang out. We really had been growing apart as she was a teenager, but now we ride together. She wants to go camping with me and go to different places to ride. And, you know, I got my husband into riding because my daughter's into it or whatever, but getting the whole family is, I've seen many families really, create a real connection again through the bike. And that's a really sweet thing to see.
I've been able to experience that as well because I've been a NICA coach in Nebraska. I'm about to be a NICA coach here in Tennessee where I live now. And yes. Honestly, it's such a family sport. Yes, the kids are competing or just, you know, enjoying and participating, but their families are right there in the tent with them. And, you know, the moms are making food for all the kids or preparing games or, you know, they're stepping in when needed. And I think that's something that's really unique about at least the Nebraska NICA. For sure, the team that I was with is just like, there is an emphasis on creating those opportunities for families instead of just the kids.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm so glad you're coaching in Tennessee now too. You're the best.
I'm so excited. I found a really, really good match.
I'm just on the advisory board. So I sit at a computer and answer emails if they have questions.
Which is a very important thing.
Just, Jason, you are on the advisory board. So you're engaged in an important, super important piece too.
I like always am inspired by all the coaches and stuff that are out there. And that's actually a good transition to our next question in all of it, talking about parents and kids being involved, because I kind of mentioned it in the intro. We just had Jesse, our local Nike coach, as well as Jocelyn, his daughter, on the podcast to talk about what they love about Nike and try to encourage some local people on if they have questions on what to do. So go back and listen to that episode. If you're a parent or you're a student listening to this podcast, get involved with Nike. Go, like, whether you have kids or not, like, you can be a coach. You can go do things at your local Nike team. So on that, what do you want parents and athletes to know about getting involved with Nike? Like how to get involved or what they can get out of it ultimately too.
Yeah, I think I want people to know that I think people think of us as a race organization, and we certainly produce top-notch race events, but the magic is in the riding and the practice and the fun. And so we just, I want people to know that they can be a part of a team without ever towing the line for a race. They can tow the line for a race and go out and just ride one lap if they want. Or they can come in a different, they can come to a race and, you know, cheer or do photography or do social media for their team. There are many different ways to participate on a Nike team, and you don't have to race. The other piece I would say is that it's a no bench, no cut sport. So as long as you can meet the requirements that your coach has for you as far as participation, you're on the team. And to me, that's pretty exciting. So no one has to worry about whether they have the right bike or the right body type or the right fitness or the right any of that stuff. If you can commit yourself to the time, you are on the team. And so so it's available and open and inclusive of everybody.
I love that. I really do. And there, kind of, I love how you mentioned like everybody's welcomed and celebrated. I still remember the first end of the year Nike party that I was invited to. And they had kind of like, they let the students have like shout outs to all, like anybody they wanted to. And nobody was saying like, oh, shout out to so-and-so for winning that race. Shout out to so-and-so for passing that person right at the end. It was all like, shout out to so-and-so who stayed that race and helped clean up. Or shout out to so-and-so for staying and cheering me on when their race was over. Like, that was like, I was like almost like crying in the back. I'm like, I wish I had this growing up. Like, this is so cool. So yeah, thank you for everything that you do with Nike. Like, it's so rad. And I mean, you were one of the original leagues of Nike. Or the original? Were you, or one of?
We're the original league that Nike was born out of, the NorCal League. The founder thought after a few years was like, wow, I think we could take this across the country. And so when he left, I took over when he left to create Nike from the NorCal League. Yeah,
that's so just cool. Incredible.
So yeah, literally you're at the epicenter that's spread across the country, and seeing that grow in Nebraska and Kansas and now like Tennessee where Sophia's at, it's, you made an impact, and like it's really cool that you're a part of that. Yeah, so get involved with Nike. Get involved. It's super cool, super rad. Thank you, Sophia, for being a coach. You're super cool for that.
I feel honored to just be able to have a part in their lives, because we've talked about this on the Nike episode that was before this one, but you know, I'm not the best mountain biker. That's not my thing, you know. And there was a time where I was learning right along with those kids, like just the basic fundamentals. And I swear, every single practice I went to, I was learning something, even though I was supposed to be a quote unquote coach, and I was, but like they were teaching me more than I would ever be able to teach them. And it's not just in cycling; it's more in just life things as well. And it really is just such an incredible outlet for kids to have.
You know, thank you guys. That's very kind of you. And Sophia, I think it reminds me of this really powerful lesson that I learned that we pass along to our coaches often. And it's a little hard to explain on a podcast. I'll be brief. But if you took a sticky note and you wrote on one of the sticky notes, what all of the qualities of your favorite coach and what you learned from your favorite coach. And then you went up and there was a wall on the left and the wall on the right, and the wall on the left had hard skills and the wall on the right had, social emotional skills. All of the sticky notes, you could try this with coaches or with adults, all of the sticky notes end up on the social emotional side. Whatever, no one says, I remember my coach because they taught me how to bunny hop.
Right.
They're like, oh, yeah. I remember my coach because they encouraged me when I felt like crap. Or I remember my coach because they expected more out of me than I expected of myself. It's not about whether they remembered you, that you were fast or slow.
That's so good.
That's so cool.
I've loved talking about all of this Nika stuff, but I also want to touch on, you know, you, Yuri, you've had a really fun career in cycling and sport. And you've just had so many incredible opportunities. Well, and one of those is, you know, working with Goo. So yeah. What do you love about what you do with Goo, and how did you get involved in the first place?
Well, let me start at the beginning, I guess. So I became a Goo athlete about 18 years ago. I was managing a local team here, the Soulcraft mountain bike team. My buddy was a frame builder. He had actually worked with Salsa. So there's a lot of Salsa history in Petaluma for those that don't know. But Salsa as a brand was started here in Petaluma. And long story short, I became a Goo athlete. I then started working with the R&D department just on new product because I enjoyed the development side of things and could communicate. And then fast forward to like some 24-hour racing, befriended the founder's son. And then I guess 11 years ago, stepped into the office in sort of just a very vague marketing role, and did a lot of different things in the event trenches and social media and all that stuff, athlete management, going to all the events, to my current role, which I've held for about 6 years now as elite athlete and community manager. So that's sort of like a real quick hit on me and Goo. But what I love about my job, much like sort of similar to what Vanessa loves about her job, is seeing my athletes like succeed, be their best selves. I don't care about results as an athlete manager. That's not what's makes me excited to work with these folks. So I just want to see them succeed and be the best version of themselves, whether it's, you know, chasing FKTs or running 100 miles or bikepacking the length of the South Island in New Zealand when you're an ultra runner, like, or running across the country like 50 miles every day for like 3 months or so. I mean, just crazy mind-boggling stuff that I find truly inspiring. And so it's just fun for me to be able to give them some resources to help them do their thing. It's a really fun job.
That's amazing. And you have been such a huge supporter of Gravel Worlds, and every Goo that we've had for Gravel Worlds at our checkpoint or had in the swag bag has been because of you. So thank you for supporting races and athletes of all kinds.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love sending you guys gels. That's a good reminder. I need to send you another cache of product. You're blowing the lid on my secret, Sophia. No, it's not a secret. We've had a great relationship. I mean, I did Worlds in 2015, I think. I came out there with Dan Hughes and Rebecca Rush, and I got to experience at an early age for you guys, like, all the killer things you're doing. So it's a no-brainer for me to make sure you have gels.
Yep, it's been awesome. The one thing I love, too, is I always know that one of the boxes when I open it up is going to have a letter, a handwritten letter from you saying like good luck and cheering us on. Like, that's just a thing that you don't need to do anyway. Besides, not, you don't need to send us Goos, but it's a really nice touch. So we've really appreciated the support. And I think Goo is now one of the longest running supporters of Gravel Worlds, going back, I think, the year after you started sending us stuff in 2016. Yeah. So, this is year 8, I want to say, because you also sent us some swag for our virtual event in 2020, when we did our donate yeah. ride submit, where we raised, I think, $15,000 or something for charities in COVID. So really appreciate the long-term support.
When you guys do what you do for the community, it makes my support really easy, you know, and it's not hard to justify. And we have a big cookie jar that I can steal from.
I love it. Well, I think we a big thing I want to make sure we talk about is Vanessa, that you are a stage 4 cancer survivor. Your story is very inspiring, and I want to make sure that we talk about it. In some ways, that battle is still happening. So first off, how are you doing? I know you've kind of had some stuff over the last year. And can you just give us an overview of that long journey that you've been going through?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I am an open book about it, because what I have come to understand is, for my own self, is that being open about it, I've been able to help and mentor and talk to a lot of people, because as you guys both know, no one in this world, unfortunately, is untouched by cancer. We all know someone who's had it or have had it, or know a friend of a friend who has had it. So it touches all of our lives, unfortunately. So if I can take what has been a very intense life-threatening situation and turn it into something that helps others, that makes me feel like I'm reclaiming the power from it. So again, I'm happy to talk about it. I was diagnosed out of the blue with stage 4 colon cancer when I was 35 years old. And that was a huge surprise. I was super healthy and rode bikes all the time. I don't eat red meat. I don't smoke cigarettes. I'm a nice person. I like drink a lot of water. I, you know, try to do all the things you do to not be get sick. And I don't have a family history of it. I grew up with lots of nature and fresh air. And so the diagnosis was quite literally out of the blue. So the second piece of that, not to be dramatic, was that when I was diagnosed, my oncologist said that I would have a year to live. So it's something we think about our mortality, I think, sometimes, but when someone tells you that there is a date and time for you, it is a totally different experiences and changes the way that you look at basically everything in your whole life. So I just turned 48, so that means that didn't happen, and it's been 13 years, so I am super proud of that. And I also like to say that I never loved the term like fighting cancer. I felt like, yes, I don't have cancer anymore, but a lot of people have fought just as hard as I did and weren't able to survive. And so the fighting analogy is a hard one for me, because we all fight. Whether or not we're successful, you know, is a different story. So anyway, it is, I'll say that it has, you know, changed everything about my life since then. Physically and emotionally and mentally, and just super grateful to have Yuri at my side throughout this whole thing. It's been, being a caregiver is incredibly hard for someone you love, and he's been here with me every step of the way through every scary thing, and you know, fears and hopes and dreams and things that we could not, that were out of our control. So having Yuri by my side through all of it has been a huge part of how I'm still alive, for sure. I'm doing okay now. I had, you know, as a cancer survivor, unfortunately what they do, and things are changing in cancer treatment, but what they do is they basically try and, like, they bring you to the brink of death and hope you survive, right? So they do all this chemo and all this radiation and all this surgery, and then you hope you survive it all, and then you hope you recover from it. So I did, but of course, because of all those things, I have a lot of impacts in my health because of all of those things. So I had a crazy, this last year I had a strep infection in my spine, because my immune system isn't so great. And then it moved to my leg, and I had to have a a big surgery where they removed a big part of my calf to get rid of that strep, and I'm now 10 months into healing that wound. Because it was so massive. I was joking because sometimes I got to make light of this shit. I was calling it the Mariana Trench. If you know what the Mariana Trench is, it's the deepest part of the ocean. Yep. But I was like, you know, the Mariana is almost done now, almost closed. So, yes, we are stoked. And I've been able to get back, not on my mountain bike because I can't get on the dirt yet, but on the, you know, I can ride around town and get on a road bike and I can walk and... I'm just on my, starting to work, you know, on PT and work, I'm calling it Vanessa 2.0, yet again, but, 3.0. Okay. 3.0.
There we go.
Yeah. But so it's been a crazy year, but I'm getting towards the end of it and getting better. And just, as cliche as it sounds, I'm literally every single day of my life, grateful to be here. And even on days like today, when Yuri and I had a bunch of stressful things happen today, it's like, okay, deep breath. These are little things. And nothing really honestly is worth stressing about. So I try and take that into every day. Don't you think I do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, good. So yeah, thanks for asking. If anyone who listens to this podcast knows anyone who is diagnosed with colon cancer, especially as a younger woman, I'd be happy for them to reach out to me. It used to be considered an older man's diagnosis, and colon cancer is the second most common cancer in people under age 40 now, and it's quite ubiquitous, unfortunately. So again, if anyone needs some support or wants to talk to someone who's been through it and on the other side, please reach out to me. I'd be happy to talk about things I've learned about it. So
And how would people reach out to you? What would be the best way?
Probably just
IG.
Hit me in the DMs.
Drop into my DMs.
DMs with some, yeah, totally. Some sexy cancer recovery talk.
Well, we've been inspired, and I text Yuri fairly often asking how you're doing. And I remember, it wasn't too long ago, I asked, you know, like, how you're doing. And he was so excited that you guys went on your first, ride again together. So it's good to know you're back on the bike after way too long, I'm sure. So, but yeah.
Thank you so much for reaching out, Jason. It means a lot.
Oh, we love you. Annie is always asking how you guys are doing too, because she knows she's so introverted. She doesn't reach out. So she has me reach out to people in the biking world that she likes.
We don't have that problem. So,
so Yuri, you actually won Unbound while she was in the depths of going through cancer, and there's an iconic video of you at the finish line saying, "I race for her." It was even a point you wanted to make sure to highlight in your Gravel Cycling Hall of Fame acceptance speech. How has she been your motivation throughout your life, and especially through these last few years?
When you know, you watch your wife, you know, nearly die, and suffer tremendous amounts of pain and discomfort and stuff like that. Not only is it like just terrifying to watch, but I used it as a way to remind myself that nothing I ever felt on the bike physically could compare to that. And I know that may sound corny or whatever, but it was this emotional well of pain that I was able to like dip into that allowed me to like, I feel like, get the most out of myself, particularly that day in 2015. We were what, maybe 7 years into it at that point. You know, she was clear, and it was amazing that she was at the finish, and it just so happened to be you know, one of the muddiest, in some people's opinions, right? Unbound.
The mud year.
The mud year. And she happened to be there, and it was, you know, crazy storybook finish. Me seeing her for the first time, in Cottonwood Falls and, you know, being behind by 20 minutes and then making up that time and having a sprint finish. But it just like, I don't know, just find what she has gone through, like extremely motivational for me. And as I mentioned to you, Jason, today via text, you know, the bike has been part of like my therapy too, as somebody who's been here to help support my wife. It allows me to go like empty myself, like physically, maybe have a good cry. It has over the years for sure. So that I can then like fill myself back up and come back and be, you know, the best husband that I can be too. So yeah, the bike's a powerful tool. But you know, I also lost my father to cancer too. And he was a huge supporter, and I have tattoos on my arms for him to remind me of what I saw him go through too with cancer. And he never got to see me turn pro or any of that stuff. But just talking about that like emotional well of whatever motivation that I'm able to tap into. And I'm not unique. Everybody has experiences. Like Vanessa said, you know, 3/4 of the population has been touched by cancer in some way, shape, or form. So there's nothing unique about me, but I just have used it to push me along over the years for sure.
Vanessa, I know that Yuri's over here saying that the bike has played such a role in his journey and healing. How has that been for you? What role has that played in your life?
Oh, that's a good question. When I was sick, I really didn't know if I'd ever ride a bike, be able to ride a bike again. And I didn't want that to be my reality, obviously. And so I really did a lot of meditation on seeing myself, visualizing myself healthy, pedaling like good circular pedal strokes. Seeing myself having fun, like just visualization and meditation of myself again on a bike. So seeing in my mind what I wanted to my body to do was a super powerful part of medicine for me. And then I'll say that I have one of my legs is compromised from my surgeries and stuff. So I will say that even though I am a Giuliano Bicycles ambassador, they have been an incredible supporter of mine, and they have been, they've helped me with the e-bike. And so while I still have my regular bikes and love my regular bikes, the e-bike has been a really big part of my recovery also, because I can still have the joy of going out on group rides with shredders like you guys that I used to be able to do. And I'm not as great as at doing that anymore because of my leg, but the e-bike can provides me with that opportunity to still feel part of the community when on some of those bigger rides and stuff. So that tool has been really an awesome part of my recovery. And you know, even today, and then just one more piece to that answer is, you know, even today in PT that we were talking about, just the trainer and 30 minutes a day and how good it is for your blood flow and just for your mind, and in the winter when it rains, although yes, we live in sunny California, it rains a lot here. And so, so just getting on the bike is actually, one of my prescriptions for my PT. So, for my recovery from all this stuff. So, it's helped me in, immeasurable ways.
Love it. So both of you have done, especially Yuri, have done countless interviews at this point. One thing that we are asking all of our Power Couple podcasts is, what is something you wish people would ask your partner in interviews?
We're putting the interviewing responsibility on you guys.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Here's the microphone, husband. Okay. In your life, how would you like to make people feel?
I would like to make people feel like they're seen, you know, respected, heard. I know that's like cliche, but I mentioned it earlier, just like same with when I was an elementary school teacher, you know, like giving people some tools and then watching them shine and be their best self. Like, I just want people to know that I enjoy working with them, I respect them, and just want to try to help them, like, you know, be the best that they can be.
Oh my God, wouldn't you marry him too? So nice.
I'm taken.
Oh my God. That was amazing. best. Right.
And then Yuri, it's your turn to interview Vanessa for a question.
What was your favorite thing about being a backroads guide?
Oh.
Because you have some funny stories. Maybe I phrased that wrong. Or should I say, what was the best thing about the backroads singles trips that you used to lead? Yeah, that's the question.
Honestly, there's so many stories, but I think the best part of being an outdoor guide was teaching people who quite literally have never spent time outside, whether they've never peed outside or slept under the stars or ridden their bikes anywhere besides a gym, or they literally have spent no time in the backcountry, teaching people the skills to be safe and have fun in the outdoors without creature comforts was like super rewarding and fun. And there's so many other stories though, but that's that would be the real podcasty answer.
Sounds like that could be a whole podcast just in itself.
Just a anonymous backroads.
Yeah. Okay. Wait. Can I ask you one other question? This would be another question. No, but I don't know. We're like, if I was an interviewer and there was a question, I would ask someone like, what job would you do if you could do any job other than the job you're doing, or if you like started over in your career, like what different career path would you take?
Oh, I can't answer that right now. I have no idea.
Okay. Right. Well, for future podcasts, we can talk about different,
We'll add it to the list.
Okay, great.
You're hijacking the podcast, honey. Yeah.
So you guys couldn't see it on here, but it was adorable because they were actually like looking at each other, like they were interviewing each other. It was
I definitely got a little video of it for our Instagram behind the scenes.
Damn you, Sophia. Look at you hidden there behind no video. You're over there.
I'm just scheming.
Yeah.
My air microphone.
Yeah.
What does the Oswald couple have on the docket for this upcoming year in 2024?
Oh, 2024 is kind of insane. We unfortunately, I haven't felt like I could make any international travel plans until my leg is totally healed. But we have a bunch of time down at our place in Arizona, in Patagonia. We have a bunch of time in Tahoe, where we love to go in California. And then we're going to spend time in Stanley, Idaho, which is one of our favorite places in America, in the Sawtooth Mountains this summer, just exploring. And Yuri's doing some really cool trips that I am not able to do with him because I'm working. But Yuri, tell him about some of your cool trips.
Well, I'm heading Girona, Spain on the 12th.
The Traca?
No, I'm not going over to race. I'm going over to do some adventuring with Jack Ultra Cyclist, Jack Thompson. He's a goo athlete, a dear friend. He came out to Unbound last year and attempted the XL. And anyway, we're going to shoot a product video for Camelback. Camelback has some new bikepacking bags, and we're going to do like a credit card adventure, castle, coffee, gravel pavement thing over there. I'm going to spend a few days in Girona and then shoot that. And then it's like Trans Rockies gravel camp in Patagonia. Then it's Unbound camp. Then it's Serena Gordon's women's camp. Then it's Sea Otter. Then it's Bantam Classic. Well, Stettner's Pay Dirt, Bantam Classic, Unbound, busy.
So it's just one thing after another.
That just got you to June. That
pretty much, I know. And then the video I'm really actually excited to shoot is I'm shooting a second chapter of the Horizons video that I shot last year to help Giant launch their Revolt X. I'm working with the Nevada Board of Tourism in Ely, Nevada, and we're gonna go shoot a second version of that, but out in Ely, Nevada, which is one of the most remotest cities in the United States.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Do you realize how cool of a sentence that was? That of like...
That's something we brought up with Ted King, yeah.
I said that to two. Like, do you just like ever like been like, was that a real sentence I just said?
It was kind of a run-on, wasn't it?
It sounds
the English
exhausting.
Teacher in her was cringing. Where are the commas? Yeah.
It sounds semicolon. Exhausting just like saying it out loud. I can't imagine actually living it, but it just has to be the most amazing experience.
Pretty fun. I mean, just this past weekend, I did a 5-person team down at Old Pueblo with some really amazing folks. And so, yeah, it's a good year. I'm busy, but we'll get to spend some time together. And then we'll like end cap the year back down in Patagonia for the Spirit World and close out our year that way.
Wow. Well, I see you in Maui over Thanksgiving.
I don't know yet.
With your family.
That sounds great. Are you inviting us? We'll yes, be there.
I'm inviting you this time, but you got to stay for the weekend after to do the Petalamua bike race.
Ah, okay.
The West Maui Grand Fondo.
We haven't even, it's her dad who pulls the trip off for everybody, so we haven't talked about it, but we'll keep that in mind.
To talk about how awesome Vanessa's family is, So the first time I actually met Yuri in real life was in Maui, I'm pretty sure.
At the brewery.
And you was like, hey, come hang out. And then the next year, we were there again. And then we're like, hey, let's go like hang out. And then Vanessa's family invited me to their like family sunset cruise in Maui. And I was like, are you sure? Like, this doesn't feel like I should be here. And they're like, no, they're awesome. Like, they're going to treat you like their own kids. And they, like, paid for our dinner at a really nice restaurant at Monkey Pod. And, you come from a great family. Shout out to all of them.
I'm super lucky. And Yuri's mom, too. We're super lucky.
But we are almost wrapping up here. But genuinely, I thank you guys both for being first, like, great humans. It's been awesome to get to know you and call you guys friends and go on some adventures. And Sophia and I will hopefully be at Unbound. So we'll see you hopefully at Unbound this year, at least one time that we'll see you. And then just thank you for all you've done to support Gravel Worlds, Yuri, and Vanessa, all you do for the kids of NorCal. It's super awesome. But before we go, Sophia always has one last question.
Yes, I do.
She's hiding back there. She's got a zinger. I'm ready.
Well, this is going to be a little bit of a two-parter because we did put something up on Instagram for people to ask questions this podcast episode. And the only person who submitted a question was actually it was Yuri. So that question is, who wears the pants in the family?
I was joking. But it's her, obviously. I don't wear the pants.
So good.
She definitely wears the pants in the family.
They're cute, though. They're cute. You can borrow them anytime.
Yeah, totally.
I love that answer.
I will admit to that wholeheartedly.
He looks so scared. I forgot I even knew that
before we got on here. I was joking. Who wears the pants? She does. Well, can I just riff off that? It's a bit of a theme because she has this one set of jeans I call her boss pants. You know, for real. Like when she has her boss pants on, it also comes usually with this finger and it means I'm doing shit or like, you know, so like when the boss pants are on, you don't mess around. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, let's finish this up then with the question everyone knows is coming. Yuri has answered this question before. We'll see how similar his answer is to last time, but we always end the episode on what does the Gravel family mean to you? So we'll start with, let's go just whoever wants to answer first.
I think to me it means a whole new, to me it's a bit of a new family, like in the last few years. It seemed like a bit of Yuri's thing for a while. But then when I got to know some of you fine people, it wasn't all just about bicycles. And I kind of had assumed I was a bit of an outsider because I wasn't a gravel racer. And once I realized that they're multifaceted people interested in art and the world and science and all sorts of other things that I'm interested in outside of cycling, and we're all really similar, and that yes, the gravel bike brought us all together, but there's a depth and breadth to the gravel family that I wasn't aware of previously, and that makes me really excited to get to know more people who love gravel riding and in this community.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to one word for me, you know, community, and the whole spectrum, you know, everything from the front end to the back end, particularly as I age out of the front end. I find my experiences like deepened by, you know, riding in camps and stuff like that. So my gravel life doesn't revolve around racing as much anymore. And that feels like a really cool place to be in my career. I can race. I still enjoy racing, but it's not like what is driving me right now and motivates me. But yeah, for me, gravel is community. I mean, we just shared an amazing time down in Patagonia. I hosted sort of an informal first of its kind gravel jamboree with some friends and teammates and athletes I work with, and folks came down, a lot of folks who didn't know each other, but there was some overlap, and I feel like there was just some real amazing bonding moments around meals, and after it wasn't even always about the bike, you know, and people getting to know each other and stuff like that, and just like expanding these circles of connectivity. So anyway, long-winded answer. And I probably didn't get anywhere close, Sophia, to what I said before, but maybe community. I don't know.
We'll have to go back and listen because I wouldn't.
Check the tapes, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't even be able to tell you. So.
I love it. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the podcast. We really, really appreciate you guys as people in our sport. And we cannot wait until our paths cross again.
Thank you. Woo.
Thanks.
I'm Sophia.
I'm Jason.
I'm Vanessa.
I'm Yuri.
And this has been another episode of the Gravel Family Podcast. We will see you next time. Gravel Family Podcast is a Pirate Cycling League production.
Gravel Worlds and Pirate Cycling League are owned and operated by Gravel Adventures LLC, Lincoln, Nebraska.
For more information on Gravel Family Podcast, visit www.gravelfamily.bike. For information on Gravel Worlds or Pirate Cycling League, go to www.gravel-worlds.com.